This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, 7:06, Tuesday, 30th of August, and of course, it's the eve of Merdeka, where we as a country celebrate 65 years of independence. In the studio this morning is Philip C, and I'm Wong Shaoning, and of course, we are the Morning Run, and we're going to keep you company till 10 a.m. But in the next half an hour, we'll be speaking to Dr. Nias Azadullah from Monash University, Malaysia, on why the government is postponing the amendments to the Employment Act. But in the meantime, let's recap how global markets closed yesterday.
Oh, they continued the red trend. The US markets downward trend. Dow was down 0.6%. S&P 500 down 0.7%. NASDAQ 1%. Now, Asian markets followed suit with the exception of Shanghai, which was up 0.1%, and back home FBM KLCI, which was up 0.1%. So the Nikkei was down 2.7%, Hang Seng down 0.7%, and Singapore's STI down 0.8%.
Why will we zig and zag as usual? But for more on where international markets are headed, we have on the line with us Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the US Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Good morning, Joe. I want to have your thoughts. I know Jackson Hole happened a few days ago, that was last Friday, but it gives us an idea that perhaps the anticipation of interest rate cuts next year isn't likely to happen. Do you share that view?
I do share that view, and I thought any hopes of interest rate cuts next year were a little premature in the sense that inflation is still elevated. We're still working through higher wages. So I'm glad, Chair Powell put that one to rest, because not until we get inflation below 4-3%, I don't know if we're going to get to 2%. We're not talking about interest rate cuts. So that's what the markets had to reset and readjust to.
And this week also marks, I think, the first time that the Fed is really going to try and unwind its near $9 trillion balance sheet. What impact do you think this will have on markets?
Well, that's going to be more interesting, and it's a great question, because it is something where the Fed, they can raise rates, raise Fed funds rate. They've done that many times before. This is different quantitative tightening. So we've got to watch very carefully the liquidity, money supply growth, if there's high yield debt, if there's any smaller companies not getting the liquidity, or if interest rates shoot up. We're going to watch that very carefully. So this is a grand experiment that could make September. September is always volatile. It could be more volatile this year into the October, November.
So what are your calls for 2- and 10-year yields as we move into the last quarter of the year?
I mean, actually, we think the 10-year yield will come down a little bit, because top of the house, our economists are still looking for a recession, mild recession. So growth is going to continue to weaken. The housing market's rolling over. Capital expenditures getting a little weaker. I think the unemployment rate starts backing up towards 4% by year end. That can take some steam out of the 10-year yield. So I think we're right around 3% as we year end, but it bounces around. I don't think it's going too much higher than where we are right now, maybe say 3.5, 3.75, but I don't see 250 either anytime soon. So it bounces around in this kind of broad range.
Okay, we want to shift our attention to China. Now, they've pumped in about ₩1 trillion of stimulus and financing into their economy, but we are still seeing a lot of economists actually cut their GDP targets. Are you positive or negative on this market?
Well, we've been cautious and bearish all year on China, just because of zero COVID policy. In April, they didn't sell one car in Shanghai with about 25 million people. The Chinese consumers locked down. Property markets under a lot of stress. So if you haven't been cutting your growth outlook for China, you're behind the curve. But the good news is China is reflating. They are corralling some of this bad property debt. And that's typically a time to step in and buy Chinese equity. So Chinese equity is getting a little bid here because the government is reflating. The zero COVID policy, maybe that goes or loosens up a little bit after the Party Congress. We'll see. No one knows that really what happens after the Party Congress.
So at the same time, right, the PBOC is trying to prop up the weakening yuan against the greenback. But with near-term rates set to widen between the US and China, what sort of outlook do you foresee for the Chinese currency then?
Continued weakness, but I don't think they'll let it weaken too much because that creates inflationary pressures. But let's face it, one of the drivers of growth right now is our exports for China. So they're enjoying that kind of that tailwind from a weaker currency. The key here is the dollar. I mean, Powell being more hawkish, now 75 basis point hike on the table in September. the dollar is just going to get stronger against a whole host of currency. China can withstand that pressure, but other countries, whether it's Pakistan, Sri Lanka, some of these frontier markets, we could be setting up for more currency pain overlaid with high inflation, food prices. So the emerging markets are still under a lot of stress, but not China. China has the reserves, as you know.
But Joe, on the flip side, don't some American companies feel the pain from this appreciating greenback as well? We've already started to see that in some of the warnings given out by corporates during their calls.
Mm-hmm, for sure. That's going to continue to increase. And remember, pharmaceuticals and technology, they're the two most leveraged to overseas earnings of the major S&P 500 sector. So I expect, food and beverages as well. It's going to trim. I mean, a lot of these companies have the wherewithal to hedge, but I do think we get into Q3, there's more trimming, lowering of guidance and estimates and earnings in general related to the stronger dollar. The key is we don't want the dollar to get too much stronger at these levels, because then it does create a lot more stress. And then, as you know, systemic risks start to build. And that's about the last thing we need. Mm. We got rivers drying up. The last thing we need is another currency crisis on top of that.
But Joe, does this at all figure in the mind of the Fed? I mean, we know that they are very focused on job numbers. They're focused on inflation. Does currency weigh in on their thoughts at all?
I think marginally they have it in the back of their mind. But remember, a stronger dollar is helping them. That's helped fighting inflation. So they don't mind, but they don't want to precipitate a global problem contagion with the emerging markets. But honestly, the dollar and the effect the Fed is having on it is secondary to Jay Powell and his mandate. He was very hawkish about getting inflation under control. So the stronger dollar is helping him. So I don't think he's going to push back against it.
So the stronger dollar helps the U.S. combat inflation. But if you look over in Europe, especially in the U.K., it looks much worse compared to the Eurozone, with some analysts predicting that the CPI could hit 18%. Why is Britain particularly affected by higher prices?
Big difference with the U.K. from the rest of Europe, like, say, France and Italy, they have not passed on these higher energy costs to consumers and businesses. They capped it. They're eating it. They're making utilities and other companies eat the higher costs. In Britain, the UK, they're passing on these costs straight to the consumer. So it's going to get really ugly fast in terms of kind of the social, political stress, economic stress. So, the UK can reset prices sooner rather than later, but there's a lot more pain because they're letting the inflation run straight to the households and businesses. Continental Europe isn't doing that. They're capping these price increases. So it's artificially keeping the inflation rate on the continent lower than it should be.
And Joe, are you watching UK politics closely? Because does it really matter whether Liz Truss or Rishi Sunak is Prime Minister of the United Kingdom? Will there be a change in terms of economic direction?
I mean, good question. I mean, I'm not really sure, and I'm not really sure on the policies. I do think the UK, they should have never left the EU. That's my opinion. And, they're paying that price. But the weaker currency, remember the pound is weakening here. Inflation, it can help. The FTSE 100 is made up of a lot of big UK exporters. So perhaps they'll get an earnings boost, but a lot of globally, everything's kind of sinking and the demand is weakening. So the weaker currency has less of an effect. But, UK, I do think they rue the day they left the European Union, because I think they're getting poorer as we speak, not richer.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the US Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Ending the call on UK lamenting perhaps that they left the EU a little bit too late. They can't go back in now, though.
It got me thinking, how he contrasted what's happening in Europe versus UK, where in UK they're passing on the cost straight to the customer, whereas in Europe they're capping it. I wonder what it means for fiscal discipline, though, in Europe. Eurozone economies then. Because, they're basically taking the subsidies, isn't it? They're subsidizing the fuel and energy prices.
A lot of it, I think, is political, right? Whereas in the UK, the Conservative government, especially if Liz Truss comes into power, Rishi Sunak is the one that wants to be the responsible adult in the room and actually pass on the cost and not say the government can't bear any more burden, especially it's already spent so much during COVID-19.
Right, and both are very different responses, because like Liz Truss is talking about tax cuts, Rishi Sunak is about handouts. So really, what's the best way, right? No one is talking about subsidies.
No one. But up next, we'll be speaking to Tricia Yeo from Ideas on Coalition Politics. Stay tuned for that, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.